The criminal justice system rehabilitation's quite different to, say, public health rehabilitation, and certainly to Aboriginal health and healing. And really, a lot of people in the criminal justice system have multiple health issues. So it's really hard for a system to respond. Like, which issue is the priority issue? Just the one presenting or the underlying ones? And then coming from public health perspective, we see the underlying issues that are about employment or economics, poverty, education, and also for Aboriginal people, history, the impact of history over, you know, decades in our families. So that means the more support and better connections people can have post-release, hopefully the less risk that they go back in. We know that their sentence length gets longer the more they're incarcerated. It doesn't get shorter based on having done the time in the past. And therefore, all those connections to the community are lost and damaged in the process. I had as a general rule with my methodology, why measure misery? And I needed as a individual, you know, someone within a family and a community to seek out the strengths and solutions.
And what are some of those solutions?
So my focus was only on the roles of Aboriginal people and Aboriginal organisations. Aboriginal people wear many hats. Like, one Aboriginal woman or man, they might be a service provider in like an Aboriginal community controlled organisation or community justice group. But more than likely they're on some reference group for some research project like mine or something. They might also be on like the local government Aboriginal community advisory group or on the Premier's advisory group. They might also be the aunt or uncle or parent or brother or sister of someone in the prison system. And they might support elders who do work in and out of prison. So there's multiple hats. So with the mob, with Aboriginal people, it's all the insider knowledge that means you can deliver really timely care. Dialogue, conversation, and also connecting people to other people. Rather than that one person already wearing many hats, having to do more and more and more, I saw Aboriginal people quite skilled at going, right, you need to talk to this person, or I'm going to bring this person in and then you two can go sort that through, or here's an organisation that does that, or here's some other connection. So the role is as a connector, not as a solver necessarily, or rescuer, but to connect and just keep connecting and connecting. More connections are made then, and more connections are made. Aboriginal men's groups and women's groups, that's where I would put my money.
And why is that? What was it in particular about those groups that you would put your money on?
People who go to those groups sometimes, or they really have a diverse membership. Sometimes you'll have someone there who's highly experienced professional right next to someone who's spent 15 years in and out of prison that hasn't really had the chance to work or have a career. But they're both there as Aboriginal people, first and foremost, to look at things like shared experiences as Aboriginal people, identity, the need for healing. Every family, regardless of what they've achieved, has those stories of trauma and damage and disruption from the past, especially from stolen generations. So those men's and women's groups, yeah, they can be fluid. They're pretty cheap to run, but I wouldn't ever want to say, so don't fund them, if you know what I mean. There's a challenge in the neoliberal context where I'm sure policy makers and funding bodies would say, well, they can run themselves, we don't need to fund them. But they do much better when there is some resourcing. And that can be definitely in funds, but also in partnerships and, you know, donations and volunteering contributions. So in the prison context, because they are autonomous groups, it's viable to bring them in prison, and for those relationships to be able to continue and be sustained, so that when someone comes out, they've got some familiar faces to go back to join again, without those fellas needing to be professionals and accredited and you know, I guess all the other barriers that might come with professional service delivery. So, you know, there's quite a lot of work to do even just there. You know, people come with a lot of damage, and like people who've been so profoundly hurt or damaged or forgotten or worried, you know, people who've really hit that place where they've had to dig deep within themselves and think about their own inequalities, not inequality, social inequality, but inner qualities, you know, and both of them are just for me the two key words in Aboriginal ways of caregiving. The social inequality plays into it. And one key way to come to terms with that is to help each other understand our own inner qualities. And then together we can address, you know, systemic issues. People can address systemic issues without their own healing journey, but you often see it laced with aggression, or it's not sustainable because it's so hard to do the policy advocacy and to stand up and to be a representative and all the flack that comes with that without knowing how to draw on your own strengths.
To go back to the end goal or direction you see this and your research travelling toward, is it to look at not only providing these community services, but to reduce the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who are reincarcerated?
It's a goal to reach in terms of generating the evidence. I've recently done a review, a very large and detailed review of any research from around the world that shows how reincarceration rates are reduced, and there's scant evidence among Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples or among Indigenous peoples. And really, I could only come up with a handful of what we call grey literature. And we have got bits of research that I would stitch together as a patchwork quilt that kind of then make a logical sense. So, you know, we do know that improving mental health and well-being can reduce recidivism, reincarceration. So that we might have one study or three studies that shows that, and then there'll be a few studies that show that coordinated case management that begins in prison with release planning and post-release planning and post-release follow-up reduces recidivism. So we can sort of stitch together those. And that's exactly what men's groups can do, because you know who's in prison. You know, the elders and the leaders, they pretty much know exactly who's in a centre, say in a town or even in a city. They'll know, and they know pretty much which families they're connected to and what the stories of those families are. We're all connected, like so many families are related or connected or have shared experience. And so they'll know who's getting out when and where they're going and what they're going to have and what they need. And they'll call people in to say, do this and come here and pick them up and run them over here. And you get dragged into stuff, you know. That's continuity of care. They're doing it, and they quite naturally, and they take responsibility. That's such a strong value of Aboriginal people, to take responsibility. I know we see people visible who look like they're not taking responsibility, but there's factors involved in why they're not, you know, and rather than blame and shame them for that, it's kind of about understanding, well, if that was me, what would be causing me to end up in that situation? In fact, it could be me. It could have been me. It might still be me, you know? So I got to keep well, and part of keeping well is assisting others.